Blog Talk Radio.
Jaguar Zone here, thanks to Impact Media right here on Blog Talk Radio, live at 7 o'clock. If you're in Jacksonville, that, of course, would be 2 p.m. Hawaii. Hi, everybody in Hawaii. I know you're listening. So much to get to today. Of course, we got special guest Frank Scaduto calling in here in a few minutes. Really looking forward to getting him on here. He does a great job reporting on the Jaguars. If you guys haven't got a chance to check out some of his articles, we'll talk a little more about them here in a little bit. There is just a ton to go over. Obviously, we know how the game went yesterday. We know about the game coming up here in a few minutes, or not a few minutes, a few days. Obviously, next week. It's a later start, too, which is kind of weird. And I'll ask Frank about that if I remember. That tends to happen sometimes. But, like I said, just a ton to go over. Hope you guys enjoy everything there. Shout out to the only Jaguars undefeated tailgate groups. Of course, that would be the Bold City Brigade and the Teal Street Hooligans, who look like they had a great time yesterday. In fact, I actually saw that Cam Newton stopped by and checked them out. And if you didn't get a chance to check that out, look them up on Twitter or Facebook. I'm sure they have those photos up. You know, Carson Palmer stopped by there before. Now you got Cam Newton. Never know who's going to stop by. It's always a fun time to see who's going to drop by and circle up with those guys. Just to see the fun they have. I'm hoping to make it down there as the Teal Street Hooligans, as they said, they're trying to name December 20th that day after me, which I totally appreciate, and I'm going to do my best to make it down there at least that day. But, excited to be here. We still have the Jaguars fight song as our opening song. Of course, if you're a local Jacksonville band or you write songs, or you don't even have to be in Jacksonville. If you're a band and you have a Jaguars-related song that you want featured on here or possibly as our new theme song, you can email us 3endzone@gmail.com, and we will obviously look into those. And, we'd love to talk to you. Love to put some of you guys in here. Of course, if you are listening to us live, we appreciate it. And if you're watching the game on either ESPN, the game currently on now, the Eagles at the Falcons, of course, it's on a couple different networks where I'm at. But, before I say anything about that game, I'll wait and ask Frank about that as well. Like I said, tons to go into. I do want to give a shout-out to a good friend of the show as well, Casey Jones, who seemed to be hanging out with all his girls at his tailgate, and looked like a lot of fun. Look forward to seeing you there, Casey, and hopefully in a couple months. Overall, it seemed like a fun game, though. But I do see that my guest is online here, so without further ado, let me bring on my special guest, for tonight. He writes quite a few articles and is always right on top of all the Jaguar news. He is Frank Scaduto, and I hope I said that right. How you doing, Frank?
I'm great. How you doing, Jeremy?
I am doing pretty good. This cold snap is a little different, but it's better than being hot.
I've heard about that. We down in South Florida have the usual with the humidity and the rain down here, so we're not able to take advantage of that cool weather we hear you're having, but maybe we'll get a cold front or two here in November, December.
I wouldn't mind sharing a little bit because we could probably use the rain up here, but either way, it's good to finally have you on, and I did pronounce your last name right, correct?
You did.
Okay. I always want to make sure, because it always bugged me that nobody said my name right, and it's a simple name. So,
how can anybody mess up York?
Between York and Jeremy, I've seen it spelled so many different ways. It's unreal.
Wow.
But as I was getting into right before you got on, obviously I appreciate anybody that's listened to us live here, especially with the game that happens to be on, especially here locally as well. Real quickly, who do you have in the games tonight? Who do you have in the Philadelphia-Atlanta matchup first?
The game's in Atlanta, right?
Yes.
That's going to be an interesting ball game, certainly with Dan Quinn as the new coach of the Falcons. The Jaguars are familiar with him and his style of defense from Seattle, with Gus Bradley having been there previously. We know his defense is going to bring the kitchen sink, and Vic Beasley is already integrated into that defense as the designated linebacker pass rusher. He looked really good in the preseason, and he's going to probably give Sam Bradford a lot that he can handle tonight. It's going to be interesting to see how that Philadelphia offense operates with that Atlanta defense, and that's going to be the key to the game. But I probably would take the Falcons at home simply because they're playing at home, and they do play better at home than they do on the road.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And then in the later game tonight, I certainly like Minnesota. I like Bridgewater and the cast there, Mike Wallace, who I actually have on my fantasy team, and Adrian Peterson coming back. I like them to pretty much play ball control and the 49ers team all they can handle.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree on Minnesota on that one. I feel like San Francisco is going the wrong direction, and they're almost about ready to blow up the farm, which could mean Kaepernick's available, but I think that's a later Jaguars discussion and one that fans don't want to hear currently. But, in the early game, I can attest, I've been to two preseason games here in Atlanta, and they're not pumping in crowd noise anymore, or if so, I didn't hear it, and I was on field level, so as far as the artificial noise, there shouldn't be any tonight, and I do have to agree, I got to give Atlanta the nod at home. If this was in Philly, I don't think the Falcons have a chance, but it's good that we agree on those, because you never know, we may not agree the rest of the night.
You know what's interesting? Arthur Blank happens to be, technically speaking, my overall boss, as I work for Home Depot in South Florida, and so I kind of have a sense of the way he operates a business entity from how they operate Home Depot. And so it kind of surprises me in some ways with the crowd noise thing. I wonder about that, but be that as it may, the NFL ruled on it, and it is what it is, and the Falcons lost that draft pick. But in any event, they play better at home. They're just a much better team at home, and Tevin Coleman's going to be a good football player for the Falcons. He's really a good running back, and he's going to give them the speed that they haven't had at that position in a while. So that's going to be interesting for Falcons fans to see.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I look forward to Coleman's running. I think he's better than Devontae Freeman, which we won't know about yet because he's hurt. But obviously, there's a lot of confused Jaguar fans as to why we're talking Falcons right now. But hey, they're used to it by now. We always cross all the shows here. But did you get a chance to go to the Jaguars game over the weekend?
I did not. I was working over the weekend, and so I basically was following the stream of the game, the thread of the game, on Forever Jaguars, which is a Facebook page for you Jaguar fans out there. Go to Facebook and look for Forever Jaguars, and you'll find us. We're 3,100 strong there and growing every day. And we kind of have an official game thread where we basically do a running, almost play-by-play of what's going on during the game for those that can't get there, or your live stream is not working, or if the game is not on, which in most of the places it's not. Anywhere south of Orlando, the game will not be on CBS, the Dolphin game. That's at the same time, will be running at the same time. Good thing we play the Dolphins this week, because now it'll be all over the southeast.
Oh, yeah.
But We provide a running commentary and updates on injuries, and certainly we've got some people that help with personnel and with in-game reports and whatnot. So we kind of run it as though we had our own radio station online in print, if you call it that.
Yeah, I definitely am one of those 3,100 strong, and you guys do an incredible job on that. What did you take away from the game? Was there something that really stuck out, or was this kind of business as usual the way the Jaguars have been?
Well, the first way that I react to the game is ouch. Ouch in terms of the injury suffered by Luke Jokel, which pretty much changed the complexion of the game. Once the second half started and Jokel was out, Carolina's defense just went right after backup Sam Young. And in the process of doing that, they wound up getting three sacks on Bortles, and it just was not pretty. As a matter of fact, in some plays, left guard Zane Beatles had to help Young out. They also were max protecting with using the tight ends and the running backs in the second half as blockers to help Young out, and it just took the backs and the tight ends out of the game plan, left Bortles really just targeting his receivers, and Carolina's defense could kind of see what was coming, dictate the tempo, and Jacksonville did not accomplish anything offensively in the second half of that ball game at all.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and it was one of the three games we had on here at Impact Media, and it was the one I was paying the most attention to, because luckily for me, the Falcons game's not till right now, so I didn't have to watch both at the same time, as usual. But some of the things that really stuck out to me, especially the Bortles interception right there at the end, because they were still in that game at that point, and if there was ever a quarterback who stared down a receiver for it seemed like an hour before he threw the ball that was intercepted by Josh Norman and ran back 30 yards, it was the one Bortles did. He literally took about a three-step drop and looked as far to the right as he could and then threw the ball right at the defender. It just, even he said it was a bad rookie-like mistake, but you just can't have those because they were still in the game at that point.
Yes, and probably part of that was Bortles knowing that his left tackle was struggling. That affects a quarterback's momentum, his rhythm, his timing, and even the ability to have the confidence to look off a receiver and look on to a second or third option. He's got to be having one eye on that left tackle position the whole time, and as a result, that probably led to the interception and then to the second interception near the end of the ball game. And he almost threw a third one, so it's just a very, very heartbreaking and disappointing second half. After a decent first half, the offense wasn't gangbusters, but at least on the two drives where they scored the touchdown and the field goal, they were moving the ball 7 yards, 6 yards at a time, and then Bortles would scramble for 11 on the one drive and then 12 on the other drive. They were moving the ball, but the second half of that ball game just was business as usual, as you said earlier, from last year. It just was like the team went back to 2014 again.
Yeah, and you know, obviously it sounds like we're dogging them, but we will get to some positives in a minute. And there were many positives for sure. Obviously, Bortles' stat line was 22 for 40, which, I'll give him that. For one, I usually come on here every week and say I don't want any quarterback throwing more than 35 times, but the Jaguars were behind for the second half of the game, so I understand the extra throws. Just 183 yards, but he is playing with his top, you know, at least two of the top three or four targets weren't playing in Julius Thomas and Marquise Lee. So, I mean, I can understand you can only target so many people, and the Panthers do have a pretty good cover four system. He did have the touchdown to Rashad Green, I believe was his name, who seemed to be kind of a breakout until he got hurt. And I noticed that on Facebook a few minutes ago, you had the update that he's been cleared, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, Green was one of those guys in the preseason who had the dropsies. It seemed like Allen Robinson was the guy that was making all the plays, and Green and Allen Hurns and some of the backup receivers that are no longer with the team or on the practice squad were having the dropsies, and as a result, people were wondering, well, you know, how far along is Green going to come? Green kind of busted out in this game with 7 catches. At the end of the ball game there on the last one, he kind of got roughed up a little bit, and he wound up having a bruised or sore tailbone, if I'm not mistaken, but the league had to go through the concussion protocol with him just to make sure his head wasn't messed up as well on the play, and he passed the concussion protocol. So he's just going to be practicing with a little bit of a sore tailbone this week, but he should be good to go for next weekend.
Well, that's definitely a good thing. I had him listed on the injuries. You talked about Luke Jokel as well, and as much as I know the fans have been kind of up and down on him, he's actually starting to play like he did back at Texas A&M. The only suggestion I have is as far as next time an offensive lineman goes down, I don't know why they're not using the long snapper, Carson Tinker. He played at Alabama. He's a real good blocker. You have to be a long snapper for one, and very rarely does anybody rush the middle on a punt or a field goal try. So, you know, if they need an extra lineman, I don't know why they're not using Carson.
Well, actually, in preseason, the team had talked about the tackle depth. Tyler Shatley was a guy that the Jaguars were going to release last preseason, and they got feelers that a bunch of teams were interested in acquiring him. What they wanted to do was get him through waivers and get him onto the practice squad. They got feelers that a bunch of teams, including Bill Belichick's Patriots, were interested. They rescinded the waivers on him, which I didn't know you could do, but you can. And so they rescinded waivers, sent him on a 53-man roster. He was inactive most weeks, but he was listed as a guard and tackle. So the team had wanted to see if they could possibly use him as a tackle during the preseason. And certainly once Luke Bowenko lost the center job to Stefan Wisniewski, they wanted to see if Bowenko could integrate at left tackle as well, too. Neither one of those possible options were given the chance to, they didn't give them a chance to practice that way during the preseason and in the week and a half from the last game to yesterday's game. And so they went with journeyman Sam Young. I guess he's been with Cleveland and another team in his career. And Young is a guy who had a difficult time at the end of last year filling in for Austin Pastor in December at right tackle. That right tackle position is now manned by Jeremy Parnell. But when Pastor went out with his injury last year, Young came in and struggled as well there, especially against J.J. Watt. So they put him in at left tackle yesterday in Jokel's spot, and it just didn't work, obviously. And, you know, that's on the brass of the team for not having the depth at tackle. So now the team has said that the roster is set, the 53 men is set, but really they kind of have to be looking at options for left tackle now. We don't know how long Jokel will be out. It's not been determined how serious a sprain it is, but he most likely won't be playing next week and even possibly the following week against New England. So we certainly need to look at fortifications to help Young out or take Young's place, because play like the second half of yesterday's game just cannot continue. We have to have our tight ends and our backs involved in the offense, you know, as outlets and second options, third options for Bortles. When you take those away and you just limit him to his receivers, that offense just is not going to work.
And, of course, I'm on right here, Jaguars Zone Live on Blog Talk Radio with Frank Scaduto. And the other main injury that I saw listed, at least, was the corner, Aaron Colvin, who hurt his shoulder. Has there been an update on him yet?
Yeah, Colvin's going to be practicing this week. He's going to play. He just banged up his shoulder a little bit, but he's a physical player. He was in on two tackles, as were all the cornerbacks. They were each in on two tackles yesterday, the top four guys. So he's a physical player, and he banged his shoulder up on one of his tackles, but he's going to shake that off and play through it and play hurting if he has to on Sunday.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that for the most part, Joakwell seems to be the main one injured on Sunday that could probably be out a couple weeks. And I agree, probably will be about 2 weeks, I think.
Well, fortunately, considering all the injuries around the league yesterday, I kind of feel like the Jaguars got away fairly well off in the injury category. There were a few other guys hurt with minor injuries. Certainly Greens was one of those, and then Thurston Armbrister also had a back injury that's relatively minor. But when you look at the Achilles injuries and the PCL and MCL injuries that happened yesterday to some guys, it certainly could be a lot worse off. And certainly if we had lost Luke for the year, if that sprain had been a severe sprain, that would have been just awful for the team. But at least we're looking at maximum a couple of weeks here. So in that regard, that's positive news for the Jaguars.
Oh, exactly. And the other injuries, obviously the people who didn't dress for the game, the tight end, newly acquired Julius Thomas, wide receiver Marquise Lee, and then no matter what they call him, fullback, running back, Toby Gerhart. Obviously the first two could have added to the offense, but what do you see Toby's role this year as? Is he more of a fullback, or is he more of the kind of change of pace, maybe third down back?
I think they've kind of got their third down back in Bernard Pierce on the team, who does some good things catching the ball and also running the ball. They've got their quick back in him. I think Gerhart is going to be more of what you would call the Steeler-type H-back, who is a guy that will block for your star back but also be a receiver out of the backfield. And I think that's the role he specializes in coming out of Stanford. So I think it's a good use of him. And once he gets through his abdominal injury and gets back to practicing, which hopefully will be this week. I didn't see an update on if he was going to be practicing this week or not. I did see that Lee is looking to return by Wednesday, and they're thinking the same about Sendarek Marks. So that's good news as well. Obviously, Thomas is out until at least the Tampa Bay game in October. But otherwise, everybody seems to be filtering back in. And then there might be some possible good news on LeRoy Reynolds and Andre Branch as well, too, regarding their MCLs. So they may be back sooner than expected as well also.
Which is definitely a good thing. As I said, there are some positives from Sunday's game. I'm not here to bash them the entire time. I'm going to try not to bash them at all. But obviously, Chris Clemons made some great plays, and the blocked field goal at the end was a thing of beauty. You can't even draw that up in somebody's backyard any better than that.
No, that's definitely a good thing. The Leo position has been kind of in the spotlight this offseason, certainly because of the injury to Dante Fowler in the first OTA of the year, of all things, and then trying to fill in for him. Clemons missed a lot of OTAs and practiced on a limited basis in mini camp in June with a minor, sort of minor injury that actually got to be a little bit worse than they thought it was. Plus, he had some personal issues at home that he was dealing with the first day of training camp. So he came in a little bit late, and he was still dealing with his injury, and he kind of was kept out of most of camp. But he looked fresh yesterday and was in on a knockdown, a pass, and got a sack in there, and he looked pretty good. Certainly, Chris Smith also was active at the Leo position on third down, knocking down some passes and putting some heat on the quarterback. So there's some good things to be taken away from that, as well as Dan Scuda, who was moving around a little bit. Kind of play on words with his name, Scootin' Scuda. He was moving from the left side to the right side, and on one play in particular in the end zone, he all but drew a holding call on the left tackle. The refs didn't call it. It should have been holding in the end zone, which would have been a safety, and that could have helped change a little bit of the complexion of the ball game. But Scooter was moving all around, left side, right side, everywhere. He was coming from everywhere. So that was a good thing to see, as well as both Smith and Clemens. And certainly once they get Cinderic Marks back, it's going to help the entire line.
Right. And then the other huge bright spot, in my opinion, because I was a little worried about this player, but to see Posluszny, or Poz, as it is so much easier to say, he had a bunch of pass breakups, but the interception he had that he was able to return for 19 yards, he was finally showing the shades of the reason why he was in the Pro Bowl last year. Not because he was like the fifth alternate, and to me he was overlooked up until that point, but to see Poz out there being, you know, the leader, almost the center fielder in the middle of the field, it was definitely a good thing.
Well, it was, and Poz was very active, as were all the linebackers yesterday. They were all in the top five in tackles on the team yesterday. So Posluszny definitely was making plays yesterday. His pass defense is still suspect, especially in that middle zone there. Other teams do tend to complete a lot of passes there, and that's where the big plays tend to start. The good news was the safeties were making tackles yesterday and at least preventing some of those bigger plays. There was one, I think, of 36 yards and one of 24 that they had. Ginn was using his speed across the middle. But it was good to see that at least Posluszny was taking the running game and stopping it at the second level before it would get to the third level, because John Stewart was breaking quite a few of those runs past the line. The Jaguars have had run issues over the years, and with Marks out, that didn't help yesterday as well. But he had about 85 yards, 86 yards, 15 carries, and he was getting into the second level, but he wasn't getting past that second level to the third level because Posluszny was sniffing those out and making those tackles. So that was good to see.
Exactly. And I think overall from everybody I've talked to, a bunch of different fans that were at the game and even some that weren't, the thing that really hurt yesterday, it wasn't even the drops and it wasn't the fumble or it wasn't even Jason Myers' two missed extra points and the field goal, because he's still young. He could have got nervous. I'll let that one go because, you know, that extra 5 points right there wouldn't have won the game up to that point. But the thing that hurt, in my opinion, is this was the best time to play the Panthers. This was a winnable game for the Jaguars, and they just couldn't quite put it together to win this one.
Well, that's the thing. And looking at the season ahead, I had predicted that the team would be 7-9, and I actually did feel like we would have some struggles without Thomas against the Panthers and probably not win the game. I'm looking more ahead to the Miami game this week because Miami's offense has had a very tough time along their offensive line in the offseason. Brandon Albert at left tackle didn't play the entire preseason, so he's really rounding into shape now. Pouncey has been injured, and I don't think he played yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, and the Dolphin offense just has not been able to generate a lot of big plays. And so that's a team that we can hold down. Much like Carolina was missing Kelvin Benjamin, we should have been able to take advantage of that. Same thing with the Dolphins. We should be able to take advantage of the key spots with missing players and be able to hold that offense down. But the Jaguars need to be able to make plays on offense as well, too, in order to at least get this one, go into New England at 1-1, and obviously the next 2 weeks after that with New England and the Colts are going to be games that are going to be tough before we get back to playing Tampa on October 5th.
Right, and I would definitely agree that this game coming up is pretty big. I actually got Jacksonville, I believe, at... If I can find my notes real quick, I got them at 6-10. I do think 7-9, even 8-8 is possible. You know, and I think right now, as somebody who has Ryan Tannehill on a fantasy team, not that most of our listeners care probably what my fantasy team does, I was kind of hoping he would break out yesterday. And when he didn't, it kind of looks good for it looks good for the Jaguars that actually this week's game is pretty winnable, and maybe the game against the Colts, because in a way the Jaguars' offense can be similar to the one Buffalo has. If their defense can play half as good as Buffalo's, then in the next 3 weeks there's a possible two wins.
Well, I don't know about the Colts game. We've had a difficult time against them in Lucas Field, and even before that in the RCA Dome over the last couple years, really going back to the mid-2000s. So that's a hard game for us every year. Of all the division games, it's probably the most difficult, even harder than going into the Reliance against the Texans. I think the Colts ran into a buzzsaw yesterday. Certainly nobody expected Tyrod Taylor to have the kind of game he had. But by the same token, that Bills defense is tough. We were interested in Jerry Hughes, and we certainly looked at him as a free agent option. But when the option came along to get Jared Odrick a little bit cheaper, we went for that. And I'm not going to say it was a mistake or a wrong decision, but Buffalo's got four linemen that are locked up for a long time, and those guys are maybe the new standard in the NFL as far as a defensive line that can go out and dominate. And you can go through the history of the league of teams that had four stud linemen and what those teams were able to accomplish, and most of the time it's usually playoffs.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And each week what I try to do, obviously I know you listen to the show as well, but each week I always try to come up with the three keys to victory, the three things that the Jaguars can do. And if they do these things, even pretty adequately, I feel like they have a chance to win. And real quickly, my first one is always the same one because I'm just waiting on it to happen. I feel like T.J. Yeldon is going to be the most key person in this. But, of course, the offensive line is the biggest thing on it, and that's establishing the run early. To me, if they establish the run early, you can throw off any defense because it's going to open up the passing game. It's going to take pressure off the offensive line. Second thing, if they do against the Dolphins, if you do a lot of quick plays and long drives and really try to keep the Jaguars offense on the field a lot, you're going to tire this defense down, which is the only way to beat a good defense like Miami. If not, Ndamukong Suh could eat the entire line possibly. I hope he doesn't. And then the third thing, the best way to combat Ryan Tannehill is to force him to move around and run. He's not a big scrambler, even though he's athletic. But keep good coverage in the field. Don't give up on plays. You know, usually 4, 5, 6 seconds in, a lot of cover guys start looking around. Stay on your guy until you hear a whistle. And I think if they do those three things, then they legitimately have a chance to beat the Dolphins.
Absolutely. And, you know, it starts offensively, it starts with running the ball. They were doing that yesterday. They were running the ball in the first half. The second half, they got away from the run. Part of that was Max Protect and helping Young out with, you know, protecting Bortles. As long as they don't have to worry about taking a back out and using him as a secondary blocker, you're going to have a weapon there either on early downs in Denard Robinson or the starter Yeldon, or on third downs with Bernard Pierce. You've got an outlet there too.
Yep.
So as long as the running game is integrated and they're moving in the ball game, they're gonna have an opportunity to gain some yards, and they did that in the first half yesterday. It's just unfortunate that Olsen decided to go away from that in the second half, and he went into the ball game using Lewis and the tight ends as blockers. They were only targeted two times overall the entire ball game, so the tight end was not really offensive receiving package yesterday going into the game, but the running backs were. And at halftime, that kind of went away. And now you're limiting Bortles to just his receivers, and that's just not going to work in the professional level of football. So we need to be able to involve those running backs the entire game. The game is not two quarters. The game is four quarters, and we need to have better third quarters especially, which were very difficult for the Jaguars last season, and fourth quarters.
Right, absolutely. I agree. But as we said, they did look improved. They did look like a slightly more evolved team than they were last year. A lot of things have improved, even though John Oser, or however you say his last name, I'm terrible at that one too. It was funny to see him post all the doom and gloom mail he's gotten recently, and people already wanting to blow up the ship. The very small majority, you know, I would still say the majority of the fans are still on board with this, and they're still behind Gus for sure. I just think they got to, you know, work on the things we've talked about, and kind of the sky's the limit at this point. You're going to be better than last year. Just start getting wins.
Well, that's the thing. Last season at this time, some of the fans, you always have your group of fans who want to make a change, always want to make a change. You know, certainly we're tired in Jacksonville of not only being the butt of jokes in the national media, but also of the lack of production on the field. Certainly we want to get back to the good old days from 95, the second half of 95, really, through all of 96, and especially the final seven games of that season, which culminated in an AFC championship game, and then the next 4 years in which the Jaguars built themselves to be one of the powerhouse teams in the league. A lot of longtime league people thought it was too much too soon, and once the Jaguars took a downturn, they were the first ones to say, ha-ha, look at that. That's all well and good. Maintaining, you know, getting on top is one thing, maintaining that is another, and that's something that the team couldn't do because of salary cap issues. But the team just needs to get to another level and start winning more games more often. The fans' expectations are not outside of the realm. Most expect between 6 and 8 victories at the most this year. So it's not like we're expecting a playoff berth or anything like that. Just improvement and moving towards that next level. The way Dallas jumped from 1-15 in Jimmy Johnson's first year to 7 wins in the second year, 7-9. Making that move towards respectability to be able to make that jump next year, possibly into the playoffs. But certainly an 0-4 start going into Tampa would be disastrous, because now you're going to have Bradley at 7 wins and 29 losses through 36 games, and not very many coaches have survived that kind of ratio. In fact, Dennis Allen last year was fired at 8-28 after the same amount of games in Oakland. So it's going to be difficult if they don't get through the first four with a victory. Certainly things look better in October with the Tampa game, and then you've got a home game if it's Houston. Things will look a little bit better as they get towards the Buffalo game in London, which now looks to be a tougher game than originally thought, if Taylor really is the real deal at quarterback for them. But they've got to make some kind of move forward and upward, or else the fans will start to lose. Gus will start to lose the fans, and he'll start to lose his players. And once you lose your players, any coach that has done that, whether it's been Jim Schwartz in Detroit or even Rex Ryan last year with the Jets, when you lose your players, then you're lost as a coach. And Gus has to keep his players' interest, keep his players motivated, and part of that is winning games. His mantra, his motto is, we believe in victory. And certainly we've got to believe in victory more than 3 or 4 times a year. It's got to be more than that to continue going, or else owner Shad Khan is going to wind up making changes.
Right. And as I've said on another Impact Media show, our Thursday show, the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football show, I feel like there could be a couple big coaching names on the block after this season, including one named Gruden. So, you know, if Gus isn't up to a certain standard that Mr. Khan would want him to be at, then he could possibly move elsewhere, which it's not the personal Jay Gruden, because I like both Grudens. I like John a little better, but I feel like Gus has been building this thing the right way, and I'd like to see him make it, you know, to see his vision.
Well, I think if Jacksonville does make a change, number one, it wouldn't be until the bye week after the London game against Buffalo, only because you want 2 weeks to integrate a new coach's program and get the coach on the same page with the players and all of that. And we've kind of got a guy at house already who has been an NFL head coach. He's
right.
Coaching the offensive line now, and he's assisting with the play calling. That's Doug Marrone. Given the talent level in Buffalo, it's hard to see why Marrone would have left that job, but he did, and he was available, and the Jaguars came up with the plan to not only have Greg Olsen be their offensive coordinator, but also bring in Marrone and Marrone's right-hand man in Buffalo, Nate Hackett. All three of them are involved in the play calling and putting together the game plan for Sunday. Now, when it comes down to calling the plays and making the adjustments at halftime, that's Olsen's responsibility, and yesterday they did not do a very good job of that at all. We hope to see better things out of that next week against Miami, but I think Marrone is more likely going to be the guy, given his experience as a head coach, not only with Buffalo, but also at Syracuse University before that, than it would be Olsen or even anybody else from the outside, because Dave Caldwell, the general manager of the Jaguars, has rebuilt the squad entirely from 4 years ago. Only Mercedes Lewis he's the only player who's had more than 4 years experience with this team. Everybody else has come since then. So it's time for movement upwards or a movement to someone else's coach. That'll be determined within the next month or so. The next 4 to 6 games should determine that. And like I said, Gus can get to mid-season surviving the Thomas injury and have 3 wins at 3-5, or maybe even 2-6. Not as likely, but more like 3-5. Then we've got something to build off in the second half when the schedule is a little bit easier. And I like the Jaguars' chances at home against the teams that do have on the rest of the slate at home, including Tennessee and Atlanta later on down the line. They just play much better at Everbank than they do on the road. And 7-9 is not outside the realm of possibility for this year, building ahead to next year.
No, it is definitely not. And especially the number one game for me circled on the calendar, at least attending, is that Falcons game when the Falcons come down there on December 20th, which for everybody that was listening a couple weeks ago, that the two main guys from the Teal Street Hooligans are trying to name the day after me so that I make sure that I come to that game. I was like, guys, I can never promise 100% anything, but I am doing my dangest to make that one of all ones. Hopefully I can make it down for a couple other ones. But as we finish up here with Frank Scaduto of Forever Jaguars, which is on Facebook, and I'll put out the information on that here when we finish up. I got pretty much two questions. I can't promise there's only two, but two questions, and they could be a little tough, but I think I'll start with the tougher one first. In your opinion, what was the bigger hit to the Jaguars franchise? Curtis or Chris Dvorak, whichever he wants to go to, retiring from being Jackson, or would it be the Scobie trade?
You know what? In a funny way, those two go hand in hand, because Scobie was this is his 10th year, 9-year veteran of the team, and he was a personal favorite of Dvorak. Certainly being the mascot, they did a lot of things together, a lot of charity events and just goofing off on the field before games and stuff. Both were synonymous with the Jaguars. Now both are no longer there. Certainly, I've got to give the nod to Dvorak because we all know that players get to a certain point where their productivity goes down, and Scobie had kind of reached that point. Even at certain points last year, he was putting a lower trajectory on longer field goals, given maybe some loss of strength in his leg to try to get the ball to travel a little further. And one in particular at the end of a Tennessee game in game 6 of last year was blocked, which could have won the ball game. But Dvorak is a legend, and Jackson, the fans are telling me the new Jackson just does not compare, and you wouldn't expect him to. It's hard to compete with a mascot that is known throughout the entire country as the standard and kind of bending the edge and setting the bar for the antics, even if it's crawling after a pigeon or racing go-karts or shooting golf with some of the best golfers in the world. And the guy is actually a very good golfer.
Oh, he's
doing it in a costume, no less.
Yeah. Oh, that shot he did at that tournament a couple months ago that he did at the Sawgrass tournament, I think, from like one knee or something, was closer than anything any of the pros did.
Yes, absolutely. He's something. He's phenomenal. And so the fans miss him already, and certainly the kids are going to miss him. And if the product on the field doesn't improve, the fans are really going to miss him because at least during the interims and the breaks during change of possessions and whatnot, the fans were looking to see what Dvorak was going to do next, whether it's jumping into a pool, rappelling down a line off of one of the rafters at the stadium, whatever it was, they were looking to see what he was doing next. And now that's not the same, and certainly that might actually affect some ticket sales if the product on the field does not improve.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And just the quick note, I know I've mentioned on here, even when I had Dvorak on last year, I mentioned to him that one of my favorite Jaguar memories was the Scobie field goal that he caught and ran all the way up the field and dang near ran over Scobie as he was celebrating with him. That I think that will always synonymously be one of the best plays in history, whether they ever win a million Super Bowls or whether that's the biggest one.
Exactly. Like I said, they're synonymous together, and now it's a change of era. We really can't say anything bad about the trade because it's a six-round draft pick. And getting a six-round draft pick, we got a six-rounder last year for Blaine Gabbert. Now we got a six-rounder for our kicker, and the kicker had a poor game against New England last Thursday night. But still, to get a six-rounder for a kicker is phenomenal in this day and age, and that's certainly going to help us in the building process next year as we continue to build our roster. But, you know, it's sad to see a longtime Jaguar go and a longtime mascot go, and it's both at the same time.
Right. Yeah, it was rough watching Scobie miss a couple field goals the other night. I felt like I was getting hit in the gut instead of him. But that leads me to the last question, and it may not be that tough, but obviously I'm going to answer it once you do. What's your score prediction for the game against the Dolphins this weekend?
Well, I'm going to put on my teal glasses, and I'm going to say that if we play the first half, like we played the first half against Carolina, and we're in the ball game, we're tied, we're 3 points behind. I'm hoping that the coaching staff learns from this week, kind of gets the feeling, you know, maybe we won't handcuff Bortles as much as we may have against Carolina in the second half with the game plan. Part of that was Blake. You know, he was overthrowing guys early in the ball game yesterday. Blake's got to settle down early, and as do all quarterbacks in the NFL. They sometimes come out gunslinging and
right.
need to settle down after that first possession or two. As long as the offensive staff has the confidence in Blake and is not worried about that left tackle position, I think the Jaguars can win that ball game, and I think they can get a 17-14 type victory next Sunday. But again, it's going to depend upon that left tackle position and upon does the coaching staff drop your tight ends and your backs in the max protect and take them out of what they are supposed to be doing, which is being weapons that Blake can use.
Right. I absolutely agree with that. I do think it's going to be similar to that in score. And I'm going to say if the Jaguars are able to pull this out, probably not if, I think when the Jaguars are able to pull this out, I'm going to put the teal glasses on myself. I'm going to say there's going to be two scores, I think one run and one passing and a couple field goals because Myers is going to rebound. He's a good kicker. I think he just needs the confidence. He needs somebody to go throw a hand over him and go, it's okay. I'm going to say 20-17. I think Tannehill's only going to put up 17 like he did last week. 20-17 Jaguars, I think, is the final score on this.
I think that's something that the Jaguar coaching staff knows is – Carolina is known for being a team that can score a lot of points and also score not very many points. It depends on the defense they're playing. The Dolphins never score very many points. They
no.
just, unfortunately, I live in South Florida, and unfortunately for them, they just lack a killer instinct, both offensively and defensively. I guess it's a good thing in a way that they've got Sue because that's a guy with a killer instinct. But
yeah.
The team as a whole reflects the head coach, and it was kind of funny when Jared Odrick signed with the Jaguars because he alluded to the fact that he used to have to go up to Dolphins coach Joe Philbin when he was in Miami and get him riled up at the end of ball games when the game was on the line because Coach Philbin was so mild-mannered and easygoing on the field that Odrick had to shake him up to, like, get him fired up to get the team fired up. So they just seem to lack a killer instinct. I hate that for Tannehill because he's a good guy. He really is. He does a lot of stuff in the community, and he's a good family man, and he just needs more weapons around him, but he also needs an offensive mindset that has a killer instinct that doesn't rely on Caleb Sturgis to kick field goals, but that goes in and takes touchdowns and puts ball games away early, so that they don't have to worry about teams coming back on them late in the ballgame. And certainly December has been the last couple of years a difficult month for the Dolphins. They just can't seem to close it out when they have an opportunity to get a wild card position. They just can't seem to win weeks 15, 16, 17.
Absolutely. And, of course, the last thing I was going to add as we're in the last few minutes, I forgot to say the Jaguars are currently tied for second in the division, which is a good thing, you know. In fact, I believe the Titans were the only team in the division to get a win on Sunday.
That is correct, indeed. I think the Colts' loss was an anomaly, and I think they will bounce back. And by the time we play them, they should be 2-1. They just ran into a buzzsaw yesterday, and that really good Buffalo defensive line. And remember, the Colts have been building putting in some youth at starting positions on their offensive and defensive lines, and it didn't work at all yesterday, but eventually it should integrate, and by week four they should be getting more competent with that and certainly be the normal force that they are at home. So I think the Colts' loss was an anomaly. Houston did not perform well at home, but that's more from the quarterback position than anything else. In fact, Hoyer was replaced at one point during the game yesterday by, I guess, Mallett. And so they're going to be fighting that all year. Remember, the Texans are without Arian Foster, so the first half of their year is going to be difficult before they start to bounce back. And
yep.
Tennessee, on the other hand, looked very good yesterday. That's the result of a very experienced coaching staff knowing what to do and going into someone's home that was starting a rookie quarterback and just literally cramming the ball down their throat right away. I don't think Tennessee can do that against every team, and so they won't look as good probably the rest of the year as they did against Tampa yesterday. So they'll drop back down too. And I think by week four, week five, you'll see the normal look in the division with the Colts on top, Houston in second, and then hopefully the Jaguars in third, and maybe Tennessee with only the one win by that time, especially once we get a chance to play them. Hopefully by then, you know, we'll be able to put a little distance between us and them. So that would be a good thing. But week one is always, you know, it depends on the injuries and it depends on who's got momentum. But week one is never an indicator of the season. Certainly in the case of Seattle yesterday, they were missing Cam Chancellor, and their defense did not play as well as they normally do. I look for him to eventually get back with the team in the next couple of weeks, and Seattle to be that typical Seahawk defense that we know. So you can compare Chancellor's holdout to Emmett Smith's in 1993, I believe it was, 3 or 4, and the team lost the first two games of the season when Smith was holding out, still went on and won the Super Bowl. So first week or two isn't an indicator of the rest of the year necessarily.
No, it's almost like the preseason. It's you can't really judge too much off of it. But, Frank, it's been great having you on, and I probably kept you a little late, but luckily we're to the end of the show, and because of the countdown timer I'm looking at, we both have to go at this point. But it's been a blast having you on, and we look forward to having you on definitely later on down the season. Obviously, Forever Jaguars on Facebook, you guys need to check them out. They do have they're as up to the minute on everything Jaguars as Jaguars.com is. They should actually employ you guys, I think. But at Ed Scaduto on Twitter is also how people can find you, correct?
Absolutely. And I'm writing for the Jaguars as a team staff writer on ProFootballSpot.com, and I'm also on JockJournal.com as a Jaguars writer, but more doing league issues and league-wide stories there as well too. So I started with a blog a couple of years ago, and that's kind of like a continuation of my blog on Jock Journal, doing more league-wide stuff. But you can find me on both places, and as well on Forever Jaguars.
Awesome. Well, once again, I appreciate it, and like I said, we'll have you on later or throughout the year anyway, because I am a fan of your reporting for sure, and it was good to finally talk to you.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed being here and definitely want to get on with you the week of the Atlanta game, because that's going to be interesting, especially if the Jags can make a little bit of a run between mid-October and mid-November. Then that game in December is going to be interesting, because that could be for 5 wins at home, 4 wins at home. Remember, we only play 7 home games with the London game, so
right.
Having a winning record at home this year would certainly be a step in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely. And the way Atlanta's moving the ball currently, it could be a very fun game. But appreciate you being on, and definitely go Jaguars, and look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, like I said, that was Frank Scaduto, who writes for all those places he mentioned that I will list off here in a minute. We are short on time, about 30 seconds to go. So, without further ado, go Jaguars. We will see you guys next week on the Jaguar Zone. Appreciate you tuning in on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, Impact Media. See you guys next Monday.
Mars, we're back.